Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Historical Friction, a podcast about retelling the past and reframing the present through pop culture and fiction. I'm Abigail, and for today's episode, Alice, Helen, Sarah, and I convened an emergency podcast session to discuss this year's Met Gala, which had the theme of gilded glamour, with Vogue magazine explaining that attendees were asked to embody the grandeur of Gilded Age New York, a period which stretched from 1870 to 1890. Given our podcast's focus on history and pop culture, this year's Met Gala theme melded perfectly with our interests. Today, we'll go over a few of our favorite and least favorite looks, and, of course, discuss the Kim K. Marilyn Monroe dress controversy. You can find our podcast on Twitter at History Friction, and you can email us at historicalfrictionpodcast@gmail.com. If you like our podcast, please rate and review us. It can really help us to grow our audience, or just recommend us to a few friends. We also have a Patreon where we've started putting out monthly digests with sneak peeks of upcoming episodes and behind-the-scenes looks at the lives of your intrepid podcast hosts. We're always grateful for any support you can give us. Our current goals include better quality microphones and a customized theme song. Thank you. And in the words of Emma Chamberlain and Gigi Hadid on the Met Gala red carpet,
I was gonna say, because I was like, tonight, mama.
You look so major. And I saw you on the carpet, I was like, oh, slay.
I swear,
oh, big slay.
Wait, like big slay?
Yeah, big slay. You're killing
it. Stop it, girl.
You're killing it. I love your look.
So, who are you wearing this morning?
My name is Helen, and I am wearing one of my signature looks, which is purple and orange color contrast, because my preference in dressing is to look like a DC Comics villain. And like a DC Comics villain, I am here today to ruin a formal event for rich people for reasons of pure ideology.
I'm Sarah. I'm wearing just a very nice tux, nothing special, because I am unable to read and understand very basic instructions.
I'm Abigail, and I'm going to be quite honest with you. I am wearing a Marks and Spencer PJ top that has Woodstock on it that says Rise and Shine. It's bright yellow because yellow is my color.
I'm Alice. I'm wearing an iconic archival piece of menswear, which is this giant Knives Out jumper that I bought on Depop that's like 8 sizes too big to me. We're here today to talk shit about other people's clothes.
Yeah, it's the emergency Met Gala episode.
I can't believe we described this as an emergency.
I feel like it really is, though. I was wanting to talk about what defines a historical emergency. Because when we saw what the theme was and what was happening out there in the Met Gala universe, we all collectively flocked to the group chat to say, this is an emergency, we have to talk about it as soon as possible. But it's like, come quick, the past is still the past.
Yeah, but the past is still the past, but none of the people that attended this event have a coherent vision about what the Gilded Age is, or indeed what history is, I think.
So true.
That's accurate.
So we're talking about the 2022 Met Gala and its incoherent theme of gilded glamour, white tie. What is the Met?
So the Anna Wintour fashion wing at the Metropolitan Museum in New York has an annual exhibition. And then every year they also have the gala that like fundraises to fund probably specifically like the fashion collection and curatorial work. So there's been exhibitions every year going back quite a long time. This year, the exhibition is In America, An Anthology of Fashion Part 2, which covers early 19th century to the present. My favourite year, and I've no idea what happened at the Met Gala that year, but I think the most intriguing one would have been 1984, with the theme was Man and the Horse.
Oh my god, it's a cowboy party.
I mean, we would be so lucky.
I think it's helpful to acknowledge that kind of the nature of the Met Gala has somewhat changed over time. And it's really under the stewardship of Anna Wintour, and before her, I believe it's Diana Vreeland, who kind of turned the Met Gala from primarily a sort of a classic chairperson's dinner for wealthy contributors to the Met into this kind of celebrity spectacular with invited guests that it is now. So this is in the last few years under Anna Wintour's co-chairmanship. It's kind of become this like glitzy celebrity spectacular and this excuse for us all to tune in and judge people.
Yeah, I would say it first really hit my radar in 2019 with the theme of camp, which I think is where it sort of became a viral sensation in a way, more than just for celebrity watchers, as it were. I think that theme really bled into a larger culture and started a conversation about what is camp, and did the celebrities actually adhere to the theme of the year? And since then, I think there's been a lot more in the past couple of years, a lot more of a concentration on the theme and how well people adhere to the theme.
Yeah, I think the year it really went really huge was the year before 2018, when it was the Catholic imagination was the big theme. But I think the kind of viral aspect of it might explain why the last 2 years the main sponsor has been Instagram.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I feel like I've been aware of it for a couple of years, mostly because I've just seen it on the internet, and like, I'm interested in the sort of weird performance of celebrity culture that it facilitates. I think probably the first time I was aware of it was maybe 2017. I think that was the year that they did the like weird chinoiserie orientalist fantasy. And I think between that and like camp and a couple of other more recent things, it's really entered into the public consciousness. And it's interesting because the event itself isn't broadcast, right? It's not like an award show. It's literally just the red carpet. And so all you know about it comes from like the pictures on Twitter and the like bathroom selfies and shit like that. But it doesn't actually exist sort of as an event for public consumption, which I think is quite cool.
I think it is interestingly shrouded in mystery to the general public, despite this accessible streamability that social media gives to it. I went back when I was getting prepped for the episode to watch the Met Gala documentary, which I believe is called The First Week in May. And it purports, it's on Netflix if anyone's interested in watching it, it purports to be this behind the scenes glance into the planning process which goes into the Met Gala, and specifically the collaboration between the curatorial teams and Anna Wintour's team and the Vogue events organisers. And I was basically watching it because I wanted to better understand the connection between the celebrities we see on the red carpet and the designers that they're wearing, because it's never been particularly clear to me how far they get autonomous choice over what they wear and how far they are assigned a designer, they're given a selection of things to choose from, and how much choice do they actually have. So I watched the documentary hoping to find that out and did not find that out. And it kind of just made me think, this is kind of a rich person playground. You and I and the simple shit munchers are not going to get access to look into the actual gala.
Yeah, my impression was that they just sort of like go and look at the exhibition, maybe have some probably not very nice dinner and leave again. But I've also very much had the impression that people literally like show up for the red carpet and immediately leave to go to one of the like after parties or something.
Yeah, that's like the understandable way. Well, you might look around at the exhibition like a little bit, but yeah, just fuck off as soon as you can.
So I, as resident feral Victorianist of this podcast, when I was getting prepped for the episode, immediately became very stressed about defining the Gilded Age, because even though I study the 19th century, as a Victorianist, I'm primarily focused on Britain and Europe. So everything that I say comes with that caveat. However, the Gilded Age is a period of American history, roughly between the 1870s and the 1900s, which saw unprecedented capitalist growth for the United States. So this manifested itself in oil booms, steel booms, massive building of city infrastructure, and some of the more famous city landscapes that we know today, like New York, Boston, etc. And it also involved white colonial expansion further into the Western US through the building of railroads. Because of this expansion, it's associated with the coming of a new millionaire class, many of whom still have names that we would recognize today and still have influence on our culture in various ways. So you have people like Andrew Carnegie, who you might know from the awards and the libraries. He was a steel magnate. John D. Rockefeller, who was an oil tycoon. Cornelius Vanderbilt, who was a rail and shipping magnate. Henry Ford, who, you know, ended up making the Model T and those automobiles, the Astors, etc.
Can I add real quickly, the John D. Rockefeller, I know I always bring it back to Colonial Williamsburg, but he actually is the reason Colonial Williamsburg exists. He basically bought the old part of Williamsburg as a town and then shaped it to be what the 18th century and the foundations of America would look like. So that history that has been given to us in America is actually shaped by the Rockefeller family.
That is so interesting, because it's like, it is really kind of like gilded history, isn't it? It's like sort of Disney Worldification, basically. Oh my God, that is such a cool fact.
There's a whole book about Colonial Williamsburg, which is basically all I know about it, called The New History in the Old Museum, which is about the history of like interpretation and performance there. So if anyone else is interested in museum pedagogy, let me tell you, that's a good one.
Who wouldn't be, is my question. So Gilded Age also a period of great inequality, hence the kind of gilded label of it. So there's some very interesting political stuff that happens during this time as well. You know, it's kind of like the takeoff of the labor movement. Some of the looks that appeared on the Met Gala red carpet actually alluded to sort of the high level of immigration to the States that happened during this time, and this immense toll of this expansion took on workers' bodies. So that's really relevant to bring up as well, I think. Like, a lot of the looks that reference the time period at all, they tend to be focused on like carbon copies of the Richie Riches of the Gilded Age, basically. But like, there is another side to this that is rooted in working class ideology, which is maybe interesting to think about too.
Yeah, the Gilded Age is very much not my era, but what I know about it comes from doing the Age of Innocence in high school. Mm. And so the Edith Whartons and Henry Jameses of sort of social change and transformation and things like that are, I think, probably what a lot of people will know, whether you've read The Age of Innocence or seen the film, things like books like Washington Square as well, where you have a bit of a sense of the way that like old money, new money collision. And a big theme, I would say, for the era is this sense of like unbridled growth, with very few people paying attention to the fact that that normally preludes a disaster of some kind. It feels like a very, in a lot of ways, it does feel like kind of an apt theme at the moment. It feels very like boom and bust and things like that. But mostly my like strong feeling about this is that all of these people have so much fucking money, and not a single one of them could even bring themselves to like listen to a Henry James audiobook.
Yes, thank you. This bothered me to no end. It just felt like nobody at the Met Gala knew what the Gilded Age was.
Right. And like, yeah, it's on the celebrities. It's also on the designers. You are these huge fucking fashion houses and you've got no like researcher in your department. Did you even go and see the exhibition that you were responding to? Like, right, come like, on.
You expect the Costume Institute to have sort of an understanding of the nuance of different details in the costume from different eras. As you know, on this podcast, we are not typically people who are like, that's not historically accurate. She wouldn't have that type of corset. She wouldn't have that colour of dye on her dress. But this is a rare opportunity where historical and modern clashes are happening like in real time on the red carpet. So I think it's justifiable to talk about it, especially because the original Gilded Age fashions were so much more colourful, structured, extravagant than anything that we saw at the actual Met Gala. Because of all that technological advancement that I was talking about, this was the time of like artificial dyes coming into the fore. So all of a sudden there were all these vibrant, crazy colours, crazy patterns, different combinations, and having vibrant colour was a real status symbol. In the Gilded Age, there was also so much structure in the clothing. So you had bustle era, you had the S-bend corset. There was 3 to 4 decades going on within this era where things progressively changed and had really interesting structures of garments. And so many of the costume references that we saw on the red carpet actually had nothing to do with the time period itself.
I think for me, what was most disappointing was the way that it seemed like so many people got the 1920s and 1930s confused with the Gilded Age, because a lot of the fashions seemed to be much more inspired by Art Deco and flapper fashion rather than by Gilded Age fashion. Daisy Edgar Jones in particular had a drop waist silver dress that then had like spangles down the bottom of it. That looks like a contemporary take on a flapper dress, but that has nothing to do with the Gilded Age at all. Yeah. You're at least 20 years too late. I felt like Lily James's dress arguably could be more Gilded Age. It was not quite sky blue. It was a little more muted than that, maybe a periwinkle. And it had a lot of geometric shapes that looked much more Art Deco to me. And Emma Stone similarly had on a flapper dress. It had feathers and a drop waist. And I was just like, none of you look Gilded Age.
It's the same, like so many people were saying that Bridgerton would have been Gilded Age. And it's like, guys.
You're like 80 years out.
I think some people were just like, oh, well, by gilded, they mean gold. Yeah. Like, I'm not gonna Google this. I'm not going to look into it. I know what one of these words mean. We'll just go for this.
I'm going to paint myself gold and fucking go.
Yeah, and I also think that there was a maybe confusion with Golden Age of cinema, perhaps. Mm. The fact that no one even Googled it to see what does Gilded Age, does it have a meaning?
We're in the information age, so it should have been very easy to find out information about the Gilded Age.
I think it brings up something really interesting psychologically about the general public. So this may shock you, I'm gonna say for this argument that celebrities are counted as normal people. Sorry to our many celebrity listeners, you are in fact normal people. Normal people, by which I mean non-historians, kind of think of history and the past as being all lumped together in one kind of general conglomerate. So there's the present, and maybe, if you like clothes, the vintage era, mm-hmm. which is like mid-century, 20th century stuff. And then there is the past. And so what you often see in sort of the general reception people have is that you'll have your Victorian corsets, you'll have your Regency sheer chemises, you'll have your Rococo wigs and paniers, you'll have your Elizabethan ruff collars, and people have a very general idea that this is pasty stuff, and they just sort of lump it all together as one aesthetic. And, you know, I see this chatting to people about studying the Victorian period, and some of the stuff that they come up with is wild because it's so far out of the remit of what the actual time period is. All of that's completely understandable. It is not a general non-historian person's job to keep up with all of this stuff. But it's very ironic that a lot of the people who were dragging the looks on Twitter were referencing things that also were not connected to the time period.
I saw that a lot with like Stan tweets. Like, you know, people who, whatever, understood the assignment kind of tweets. And it's like, yeah, this is a picture of Doja Cat in like a Marie Antoinette look. That's not Gilded Age. Also, she wasn't there. Sit down. And there was a lot of that going around where it's like, oh, it's the past. It's glamorous. It's like, no, you can't just stick a corset on and call it historical.
Yeah, I saw a lot of tweets saying that Phoebe Dynevor didn't understand the assignment and she should have done better since she was in a show with Gilded Age fashion. And it was like, she was in a show with Regency fashion in set in Britain, not in a show set in America.
Also, Phoebe Dynevor doesn't design her own costumes. The girl shows up and puts on what she's told to wear.
She's not actually Daphne Bridgerton, thank God.
Yeah, no kidding.
Should we do our bests and worsts? I think it's really interesting. We all kind of compared notes a little bit before this, and we seem to have all had very different criteria for what counted as a good interpretation.
Yes, so excited. Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll go first, but I have not looked through the entire like 400 pages of photos of this because I'm a busy woman with a life.
You have a real life.
And like, there is only so much. So, but look, I thought Billie Eilish looked really good. She wears a corset, the silhouette, I think is really good and very like Titanic-y. I think hers is a very actual good interpretation of Gilded Age, and I love it. I think it's very good.
I read that Billie Eilish's look was actually based on a portrait. I believe it was a portrait by Sargent. And you can really see like the shape and the colour palette influences on that one look, which I think is very cool. Tick. Understood the assignment.
I hadn't clocked that, but now looking at it, I recognised the painting. Oh, yeah, I love her. Very good.
Honestly, I agree. I think that was one of my favourites. All of the ones that I liked the most were ones where they sort of took the silhouette and then did something different to it. So one of my other favourites was Madeleine Petch. She's got a big yellow sleeve going on. She's got a bustier top and then this very long fitted, almost a hobble skirt that goes out into a flounce at the bottom. And it's got a bit more colour and texture than a lot of the other costumes, but it's got that really like exaggerated silhouette. She's not wearing a corset, but she may as well be because of the shape of it. And others that I thought did that really well, I mean, Simone Ashley almost got it right because she had this big sort of drapey sleeve coat thing going on. She's just wearing a bustier and a black skirt, but it almost had the kind of very theatrical thing. I actually loved what SZA wore, which is this kind of incredible cerise watered silk busty thing, and then latex boot tight things and gloves and an enormous hat. And I thought that was really fun because of all the textures and stuff.
Like she's a saloon keeper in the Wild West.
Yes. And I thought it was great, honestly. I thought it was like fun and exaggerated and like horny in a way that most other people were not capable of doing. I thought it was great.
And also uses colour in that vibrant way that we were talking about, which very few of the other attendees were brave enough to do. So that is really cool.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually thought Vanessa Hudgens looked amazing. She's got this kind of like see-through lacy mesh dress. I just think it's fun. I think that the ones I liked the most did that where they sort of took the shape or took some of the kind of more obvious reference points of like corsetry, drapery, things like that, and then did something different with them. But yeah, I thought Billie Eilish looked amazing. I think more people should have just like straight up come dressed as paintings. It would have been a lot more fun.
And it would have been an easy way to work into the theme. It would have been safe yet entertaining, which is all people really want.
Yeah, my favorite was also drawn from images. I loved Emma Corrin's look, and I feel like this was divisive. They are wearing menswear, and they have based their look on a wealthy Gilded Age fop named Evander Barry Wall, who was called the King of the Dudes. And Emma Corrin's jacket actually has the King of the Dudes embroidered on it. The look was by Miu Miu, I believe. And I just loved everything about it because they look exactly like the picture of Evander Barry Wall. The coat is huge and has these huge broad shoulders. They have this hat on that is more rounded than Wall's hat looks, but sort of in this exaggerated, almost like a political cartoon from the time period way. And their shoes are so on point. The shoes maybe made it for me. They look so Gilded Age. I loved Emma Corrin's outfit. That was definitely my favorite. And I think maybe just because it was so unexpected.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was excellent. And that extra sort of background and interpretation just... That is someone who's actually done the work to think about what this can mean and do something really, really unexpected with it.
There's actually this Instagram account that I followed that was going through all the men's outfits and categorizing them by whether they met the definition of giant shoulders, tiny feet, which you see in a lot of the like fashion illustrations of men at this time, where they've got the like really big, exaggerated sort of greatcoats and then these dainty little, these pointy little toes poking out. And Emma Corrin is really the best example of giant shoulders, tiny feet.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then I, being me, also loved Blake Lively's dress, which I also know is a divisive pick. I think maybe part of it is that Blake Lively's look was so saturated on Instagram after the event. And I don't know if it deserves all the attention that it got, but it, to me, had a very Cinderella-y vibe, which you know I love because there's the transformation. She's wearing a pretty structured strapless gown with shoulder-high gloves, and it has this big sort of bow, and it's more of a rose gold to begin with, and then it unfurls into a teal color, and the gloves also change to match it. Literally, the color is the color of the Statue of Liberty, the sort of green, copper green that the Statue of Liberty has. And it was, I read, based on the Statue of Liberty. It was an homage to her. And that statue was dedicated in 1886. So right smack dab in the heart of the Gilded Age. Well done, Blake Lively, on that one. And there were a lot of little details with the stones, the rhinestones, or maybe real stones on the dress. And then in her tiara, the tiara has the same number of points on it as the Statue of Liberty. But I was super impressed because I just saw the before and after pictures and was like, wow, this is so awesome. And I kind of imagined that she just twirled and the thing came out and it was like a Cinderella transformation. And then I saw a video where she sort of has like the race car people come up and unpin everything. And I was like, oh, that's less magical than I thought it was, I guess. But I did really enjoy the look.
Yeah, I feel like coming dressed as the Statue of Liberty for an American themed anything is, it's so cliche that if you do it well, it's really impressive. And I think in this case, like, it wasn't too literal. I mean, it was quite literal, but it wasn't, she didn't have like a literal torch in her hand, I don't think.
I'm just sad no one came dressed as a light bulb. You know, you always see those pictures of like the Gilded Age costume parties where someone's like dressed as an electric lamp or whatever. And I wish that there had been more like extravagant costume in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like Elon Musk could have come as actual Nikola Tesla.
Why was he there?
Look, why is he invited to anything?
Well, I mean, it was celebrating the age of robber barons, so...
Yeah, it is quite fitting, I suppose. I also really loved Lizzo. And
yeah,
the coat jacket thing that she has is really oversized. It's got this beautiful embroidery on it. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I felt like it was so on theme too, because the base part of the dress is very, very much a structured corset look, and sort of the long, more Edwardian corset as well. And it even has, when you zoom out from it, to me, sort of a Belle Epoque can-can Moulin Rouge look.
I didn't like it at first because I only saw the top half and I was a bit like, okay, it's a big coat, whatever. But then seeing the whole thing and seeing the reference images for it as well, I thought it was quite cool.
Lizzo was absolutely one of my favorites. I think what I really loved about her look was that it did a really fantastic job of marrying together what's distinct about Lizzo's style with what's distinct about the time period. So you have this very sexy corseted two-piece look where there's a corseted bodice attached by garters to a corseted skirt piece, and it's very much underwear as outerwear kind of look. But then you have this beautiful dressing gown robe, which to me very much reminded me of the sort of 1890s very voluminously sleeved tea gowns or morning gowns, which have this really gorgeous voluminous silhouette. And for the 19th century, that would also be considered underwear. That would be something that you would wear around the house, you would wear with your family and your intimate friends, but it wouldn't be an outside look. So you have Lizzo's sort of gorgeous, sexy, form-fitted look accentuated by something which is also a 19th century version of underwear as outerwear. And I thought that that amalgamation was really, really cool. Lizzo crushed it. Go, Lizzo. Another favourite that I think was really interesting was Jessie Buckley. And Jessie Buckley wore a chaparelli suit, black with a silver pinstripe, had these interesting silver braid detailing, and she wore it with a broad-brimmed hat and a false mustache. It was very like gender disrupting, slightly campy, very queer friendly outfit. To me, it's spoke of that kind of frontier west aesthetic. She looks to me like a sexy sheriff in a small town. She's got that swagger about her, and something of the frontier, something of the, perhaps it's just the way she holds herself on the red carpet. Yeah. I don't know, but there's this very swaggering sort of I'm a self-made man, but I'm also a hot lady kind of vibe. And I think it was really cool. Originally, I thought, like, I think there is precedent in the 19th century for a pencil mustache. I'm not a historian of mustaches. I don't know if anyone is a historian of mustaches in this world. I hope so. But I couldn't find much on record from the 19th century about the pencil mustache. So I realized what I was probably thinking of was Clark Gable as Rhett Butler.
Yeah.
Who has a famous pencil mustache.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, when I initially saw it, I really loved her presence on the red carpet and the look, but I didn't see it as Gilded Age. To me, it looked very much like Salvador Dali. And I think that a lot of had to do with the mustache, but hearing your description of it as an Old West or a Texas oil baron look, I think makes a lot of sense and sort of expands a Gilded Age notion to a larger subsection of America rather than just a New York socialite elite, which I think is fascinating.
And the interactions between those social groups with the new money, the robber barons coming into the kind of old money wealth, is quite interesting, because I think a lot of the looks that we saw that did see the Gilded Age as an influence, they're very focused on the East Coast influence and stuff that was imported from France and stuff that kind of comes from the old money heritage founder aesthetic. So it was quite refreshing to see something different. I think it's interesting, a lot of my favourite looks actually tended towards the more masculine. Another one that was an absolute favourite of mine was Autumn de Wilde, the photographer-director. And I was like 50-50 on this, because on the one hand, Autumn de Wilde, she is wearing this silhouette which is very familiar for her. So she has like a trouser suit and a pointed boot and a long smock coat with a vast voluminous pink bow and a broad-brimmed hat, and she's walking with a cane, which I think is both a stylistic choice and to accommodate a disability, I believe. I think she has an ongoing injury. So that was cool, like combination of form and function. But this is a silhouette which is very familiar to some of her other red carpet looks. So on the one hand, that's kind of playing it a little bit safe. But in this specific instance, I think the voluminous bow and the way that she's holding herself is intended to be a callback to her namesake, Oscar Wilde, who in the 1880s, height of the Gilded Age, was giving his first lecture tour of America. And this was kind of part of what launched Oscar Wilde as a global celebrity figure. And it was also a series in which Wilde socialised and was hosted by many of the prominent Gilded Age people. If you look at the colour scheme and particularly the drapery and kind of like the caped look of Autumn de Wilde's coat, it's really, really similar to some specific photos that Oscar Wilde commissioned of himself while he was in the States. So to me, referentially, that's really cool. It's kind of one of those things where I question whether Autumn de Wilde was fully doing that intentionally or whether it just happens to fit really well with her natural aesthetic. But either way, it looks really good and I was excited about it.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought this to the Wilde outfit to my attention, because I hadn't seen it before and I love it. The only thing I have to add is that on Oscar Wilde's 1882 America tour, that he and Walt Whitman probably fuck.
Oh my god, yes, of course!
That's a very sexy side note. I love it.
I love this. I love this so much. I think that she actually looks amazing. I love the ruffles of her sleeves coming out from under the coat. I think that, again, similar to Jessie Buckley, like the way that she's carrying herself is the thing that really sells it. Like, she's got a pair of gloves in one hand. She's got the sort of like angled pose. She's got the sort of slouch hat and cape thing going on. And it's a huge mood, whether or not it's deliberate or not.
I think it would be impossible for it not to be deliberate to some extent. that detail with the gloves, which actually I didn't even notice until you pointed it out, and I was the one who put the image in the document, so shows my observational skills. But yeah, she's got the gloves in hand, which is like exactly mirroring one of the Wilde's photographs. And you expect that from Autumn de Wilde, because that attention to detail about the sort of the overall form of a shot, that's very important to her. So it all seems very cohesive, and I love that.
Yeah, we should go on to maybe our worsts very quickly, because we still have quite a lot to get through with some controversies on the red carpet. And so let's quickly just say a few worsts.
I mean, this is not like a groundbreaking theory at all, but I think generally speaking, men at the Met Gala are just so underwhelming. Like, there's just a lot of shit, boring suits year in, year out. And I wonder if part of why this year was such a dud, and it felt like such a dud on Twitter as well, is that some of the people who've done the most interesting things recently, like, just weren't there. So Rihanna wasn't there, Zendaya wasn't there, Lady Gaga wasn't there, Lil Nas X wasn't there. Some of the people who've done kind of quite interesting, quite fun, quite exciting things in recent years didn't come. And so, like, everything just felt a bit flat. But there were a lot of men in just, like, firstly very boring suits, and secondly, like, just actually, what the fuck is this outfit?
Yeah, also, can we just, why the baseball hat and the, like, hairnet and the t-shirt sleeve?
Is this the Kylie Jenner wedding dress?
Yes.
I was deeply upset by the Kylie Jenner wedding dress at, like, an ideological level. Because it is, on the bottom half, a ball gown, and it is the wrong silhouette for the era, which is the first sin. On the top half, it is a mesh crew neck t-shirt. And then she has a veil that is also a baseball cap. And unbelievably, this is not the only couture baseball cap on the red carpet. Nicki Minaj had a black leather baseball cap atop her head. To quote Dr. Diffenschmertz, if I had a nickel for every couture baseball cap on the red carpet, I'd have two nickels, which is not a lot, but it's weird that it happened twice.
Yeah, but Nicki Minaj, like, that's just what she does. Like, she has a corset, a big sort of skirt on top of, like, some leather trousers, and a leather baseball cap. She actually looks good, as opposed to the white ensemble, which is just dreadful.
So I heard that the wedding dress was what she was supposed to wear last year, when the theme was literally just, like, something American. And she didn't go last year because she was pregnant, I guess. And so she's just didn't bother to find a new outfit for this year. The fact that she just, like, fully recycled it is probably what pissed me off the most.
Yeah. And then we had a bunch of people who just took the word gilded and said, it's gold!
I love
and
it.
Wore a lot of gold.
I'm like, that's fine.
This is where we come to a clash, because I was deeply angered by every single person who made that choice. And Sarah feels
the opposite. I
think it's
great. I think it's just like, you've read the invitation and you're like, I understand what these words mean individually. And that's fine.
Let's talk about the ultimate worst that we think, though, which Dakota Johnson.
Oh, God. Dakota Johnson, that look made me feel ill.
Firstly, imagine going anywhere with Jared Leto in this year.
Oh, God.
Imagine voluntarily spending time with Jared Leto in this year.
They're only doing it because they're part of the same clone vat.
Everything he does is just the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Dakota Johnson's outfit, again, doesn't look Gilded Age at all. It is a full-on jumpsuit with a bunch of, like, little stringy sparkle spangles coming off of it. What did you call it, Helen?
The sequined Sasquatch.
Yes, and I agree. I think that is what it looks like. And if I had to say what it looked like an homage to, I'd again say flapper, like, sort of with the spangles. Yeah. Like, it's not Gilded Age at all, and it's not good for a flapper either, frankly. It just has no redeeming qualities as far as I'm concerned.
It's kind of glamour algae.
Yeah, I just think it makes her look like a cryptid. Like, she looks the most Gilded Age thing you can say about it is that she looks like a woodcut from some kind of backwater illustration of a strange creature that was found in the woods and placed in a sideshow. The way the sequins fall around her body, it makes it look like a thick coating of hair.
Yeah.
And whilst I am pro-body hair on women and people in general, something about it makes me feel ill.
Dakota Johnson has also just, like, absolutely chronic modern face. She emerged fully formed in the world circa 2010. She doesn't exist in any era except for this one. I cannot buy her in any kind of historical costume. I sure as shit cannot buy her as fucking Anne Elliot. And I'm already preemptively angry about the adaptation of Persuasion that she's in.
This outfit reminds me of late medieval illustrations of Mary Magdalene when she has gone into the desert and lives naked in repentance. And then she meets a man and she magically grows hair all over her body to, like, cover her modesty. And sometimes this is shown with her just having very, very long hair that covers her entire body. And sometimes she, like, has a pelt. And that's what she looks like here. Like, she has a pelt.
I would actually see Dakota Johnson in that movie.
That would, yeah.
That's exciting. Yeah.
What about your redemption picks, though?
Yes. Which ones are we saving from the ignominy of the internet?
Yeah, so let's each pick one. And I'm going to say that my favorite look was Hamish Bowles, who was someone I had never heard of prior to this, but he is the European editor-at-large for the American Vogue. I clearly have not been keeping up with Vogue staff as well as I should, but he had a very Gilded Age, as far as menswear goes. I think maybe that was what was so shocking, is that he actually did the theme and he's a man in menswear. And it looked very Gilded Age. He had sort of a laurel crown, which I loved, and he held his top hat. And then the detail that just sold this outfit for me, though, was that his shoes have his monogram embroidered on them. And it was just that level of detail. I can also tell he has a brooch on, and I was trying to zoom in on the brooch to see what it looked like and what significance it might have, but I couldn't see it well enough. But I'm sure there's significance there, because I'm assuming, based on his job, he knows fashion.
Yeah.
My redemption pick that I'd written down was Sebastian Stan, who looks like a monochrome Mr. Blobby. He's wearing this, like, all bright pink outfit. He looks like a giant toddler. But then, this morning, I realised that obviously the best one is Priscilla Presley, whose outfit I don't know or care about. She was accompanied by, / accessoried, using the actor playing her dead husband. It's so good.
Who is like 24 or something.
Hang on.
Yeah.
What?
She was there and she was accompanied by the guy who plays Elvis in the new film.
She's doing a shenanigan.
Yeah,
and I respect
it's
that.
It's very good.
I would like to make a case for my redemption pick. I think Sarah Jessica Parker looked really boring. She wore the same kind of shape and style as she always does. She's always got some kind of insane Philip Tracy headgear and a big-ass ball gown. But the dress was apparently an homage to Elizabeth Hobbs Keckley, who was the first Black woman to be a fashion designer in the White House. She was a former slave, and she became the official dressmaker to Mary Todd Lincoln. So she was like an actual, really significant, famous designer, kind of fashion leader in the Gilded Age. But people don't remember her very well, and apparently this was inspired by a sort of gingham print day dress that she had designed. I think this is nice. You know, apparently the designer said that it was about, the idea was to highlight the dichotomy between the extravagant, over-the-top proportions of the time period and the disparity that was happening in America at the time. Like, I think that's great. Conceptually,
yeah.
100%, totally stand by it. Finally, someone did their damn homework. But the dress is bad, and she looks like she's about to go and murder some dogs.
I think if it wasn't for the fact that she wears that dress,
that shape and like headgear and everything, she always looks like this.
So it's, if it had been on someone else, it would have been a little bit more surprising and maybe more interesting.
My controversial redemption pick, I feel like the internet hated this look so much, and I think it was unjust. My redemption pick is Amy Schumer, wearing Gabriella Hearst coat dress. My opinion about this is that the look took a lot of flack because of who Amy Schumer is as a person. I don't particularly favour Amy Schumer. She has said a lot of controversial and, more importantly, unfunny comedy bits that were offensive to multiple parties. She also has vocally made fun of the Met Gala and doesn't understand the point of it, and her entire facial expression on the red carpet is that of someone who would rather be literally anywhere else in the world. Because of all those reasons, the look that she's wearing took a lot of flack, but I actually think that it is very elegant, and more importantly, it's on theme, so I'm going to briefly argue why. This dress is actually very similar to the open shoulder dress that Kate Moss is wearing, and I think that this dress is better and more interesting. It is also a double-breasted coat shape with wide lapels which open out into an open shoulder moment. It kind of reminds me of a more feminine version of a man's top coat. So you've got the double-breasted part and the wide lapels, and it sort of flows down to this asymmetrical silhouette. And there's a nod to women's corsetry at the waist with this braided detail. There's actually like a lot of nice details and textures in this. To me, it's like really reminiscent of a scene of some Gilded Age heiress on a steamboat stepping out onto the deck in the midst of a party and just slinging her male lover's coat around her shoulders. I think it's a really gorgeous garment, and Amy Schumer wears it like a trash bag because she's miserable to be there. But I think the dress deserves redemption, and I will die on that hill. I have said.
Thank you for making that case, because yeah, now I'm looking at it, the dress is fine. She just looks like shit.
Yeah, it's the way she's like stamped, like you painted such a beautiful romantic picture of how that dress could have been worn, but she's just so clearly like bored and thinks that she's too cool to be there.
Right. And like also the other thing about this is like if you accessorize that dress differently, like if there was like a little bit of diamonds, black diamonds would have been cool, some kind of headgear, ditch the sunglasses, I would have styled that dress and I would have looked really good.
I think that probably Cartier, who supplied a lot of the diamonds to this, did not want to lend her anything.
Should we talk about Cartier diamonds while the topic is
let's up. Do that.
So
oh my god,
so Emma Chamberlain is a YouTuber, and she did a lot of the interviewing on the red carpet on the way in, and I didn't notice at first that she was wearing this diamond choker until it was pointed out to me later on. It's quite a spectacular piece of jewelry, but it's a part of the Cartier archive collection. And so I looked into the history of it a little bit, and it was made in 1928 for Bhupinder Singh of Patiala, an Indian prince, who he literally brought like an entire suitcase full of diamonds to Paris. The necklace, of which this choker is a part, contained an almost 3,000 diamonds, a bunch of rubies, and at the centre of it was the, in 1920s, it was the seventh largest diamond in the world, and known as the De Beers diamond. And then it disappeared from the Patiala treasury in 1948, just as the kingdom became a part of the Indian Republic. So it's not, the mysterious circumstances under which it disappeared seems to have been more to do with maybe tax reasons or something. Like it's not a victim of like English looting of treasures from colonial or like from parts of the empire, like we often see with other parts of jewellery that turns up in Britain. And then the De Beers diamond, the central one, turned up at an auction, often described as mysteriously turned up at an auction at Sotheby's in Geneva, where there was a bid for 3.16 million, but no one really seems to know if it was actually sold, like if it met the reserve or not. And then a few years later, the rest of the jewellery was found in a secondhand jewellery shop. It was bought by Cartier, and then they spent 4 years restoring it. So Cartier has it and they treat it as part of their historic archive. And then they lend it to people. And in this case, Emma Chamberlain wore the choker of it. So obviously it's a very complicated history, but as opposed to other objects that turned up or other clothing and jewellery that turned up, it's a part of their archival collection rather than museum collection. And I think we see this quite often, don't we? Like that fashion houses will have archival pieces that they lend or adapt.
Yeah, right. And like most of the jewellery that gets worn at events like this is on loan from archives like this. They're not technically museum pieces. They are just like maintained historic collections. And it's really common to see clothes come from an archival collection as well. Like there's been a lot, the Mugler archive got opened up quite recently. And so a lot of like incredible Thierry Mugler clothes from like the 90s have been available for people to borrow for events and things like that. And that's a really cool thing. You know, that's a really interesting approach. Not everyone at the Met Gala did this.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like we've been teasing this for so long. And if you've made it this far into the episode, congratulations. We have to talk about this fucking Marilyn Monroe dress. Because
welcome to the climax of our outrage.
There's just so much going on here.
So for the people who don't follow the Met Gala, I think we should summarize what happened with the Marilyn Monroe dress.
I feel like even people that don't follow the Met Gala saw this. It's literally for people who don't know how to use a computer, in which case, how are you listening to this podcast?
For people who live under the ocean with the sea creatures, Kim Kardashian decided that she wanted to be the one to wear Marilyn Monroe's infamous sheer sequined dress, which she wore to sing Happy Birthday, Mr. President to JFK. It was on loan from Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum.
They are not an accredited museum.
They call themselves a museum in the same way that Dr. Dre calls himself a doctor. It's a stage name.
Not to get too into the weeds about this, but an accredited museum will have collections care policies that prevent these kinds of things to happen to the objects in their care. Because Ripley's Believe It or Not is not an accredited museum. It's like the only reason they can do something like this.
So she wore this dress. It didn't fit her. Firstly, this is like, it's a very famous dress, mostly because of how she wore it and how she looked when she
Marilyn
wore it.
Marilyn Monroe, like, you mean?
Marilyn Monroe, to be very clear. Marilyn Monroe. So this is, you know, you don't ever really see it clearly, but they're like photographs of her singing and performing in it. It looks like she's nude. She's just covered in glitter. And it's this really delicate, silky material that is like the original Nude Illusion fabric. Bob Mackie used it a lot. It's like half of Cher's wardrobe from like the 70s and 80s are made with this fabric. It's incredible. It's really, really fragile and also, I think, quite flammable. And so it's not made anymore and you can't replicate it. And people have moved on to things like mesh for Nude Illusions. But the dress was so like fitted to Marilyn Monroe that she's literally sewn into it in order to be able to wear it. And the whole point is that no one else will ever be able to wear this. So it ends up in the Ripley's collection and Kim Kardashian borrowed it for the Met Gala. Firstly, it's not on theme. It's not on fucking theme.
No. I mean, I think that is, it makes no sense why she would borrow this particular dress, which is a mid-century American object, has nothing to do with Gilded Age America. It's at least 50, if not 60 years off.
I think they thought golden, like Golden Age of cinema.
Well, or they thought it's sort of a gold dress and gilded means gold, sort of like a bunch of other people did, but it's not on theme. And I think a lot of the outcry has had to do with the way that Marilyn Monroe has been objectified in her life and in her death and has essentially never been treated like a real person, but an icon and a sex icon. And Kim Kardashian wearing this dress, in addition to damaging the dress because of its fragile nature, because of the fact that she didn't really fit into it, because of her own, Kim Kardashian's own crash diet, which is unhealthy and sends unhealthy messages, in order to attempt to fit into it, all of the body oils that would have been on any human being wearing an old dress, and then also whatever kind of cosmetics that Kim was using and any kinds of perfumes, all of that's going to contribute to damaging this dress. And so you have those factors combined with the Maryland factor and the fact that it's almost, it sounds weird to say disrespectful to the memory of Marilyn, but it kind of is.
Yeah, it's, she wore a replica later on. Like, why is she not?
Why not?
Yeah, why not have a replica that fits you? Like, I think there is something really interesting in museums that have fashion collections, in what those kinds of collections can tell us about the human body and like postures and like how we interact with our own bodies, or like how clothes mediate bodies' expression in the wider world, for example. And about, must have been like 10, 15 years ago now, that Glasgow Life, the charity that runs all of Glasgow museums, they have a quite a large costume collection, a historic costume collection, and they made a replica of a bodice for a dress that with like the replicated embroidery, and it was a real sort of phenomenological insight. So they created a film where they talked to people who had embroidered it and sewn it, and then they got this model or actress to wear it, and it took quite a long time to find someone that had the right build, because people historically, our builds have changed quite a lot. But also when they had this person, this woman, like she was wearing this replica, and they interviewed her about how it felt, and she was talking about how her entire posture changed because of how it was cut. So there is a real historical value in maintaining important historical clothing and pieces like this. And if you've said that this is a once, like a historic object that's important to speaks to like a particular period, a particular person, a sense of fashion and changes, to then allow someone to wear it and to wear it in a way where it gets this badly damaged. It's just very sad.
For me, the spectacle and the kind of media circus that surrounded Kim's decision to wear the original dress on the red carpet, it kind of brings up all these kind of interesting questions about like the pseudo religiosity of celebrity that we have now. Because there's kind of this sense that in many ways, in replacement of saints and religious figures, a lot of us are drawn to celebrities as these figures who we can emulate and represent. And part of that is having material, physical relics, artifacts which touch their skin, which touch their bodies, which historically we have in many different religions as commemorative of important people. And there's this sense that a physical thing can hold on to the aura and something of the essence of the person who wore it or the person who owned it. You also see this in the Victorian period with something like mourning jewellery, which was made from human hair. And the other completely bizarre choice that Ripley's made was to gift Kim Kardashian a small jar of Marilyn Monroe's hair.
Ooh, yeah, I hadn't heard that part.
There's a whole strange ghoulish hero worship situation happening with Kim and Marilyn, where evidently Kim either identifies with Marilyn Monroe or is trying to draw some kind of cultural parallel between herself and Marilyn Monroe. And it's interesting because her hero worship of Marilyn as a figure is on par with sort of anyone's hero worship or fascination with the celebrity. However, because Kim Kardashian has more money than God, she has the status and the access to do something which no ordinary person would ever be able to do. And it kind of brings up like that really interesting question of like, what is the Met Gala for? Is it to raise money for a historical cause and draw attention to history, draw attention to costume history? Or is it just a celebrity spectacle? Because we were all saying, like, nothing was really served by Kim wearing the dress.
Yeah, I think I have, like, very complicated feelings about Kim Kardashian, as I think just the entire world. And I think that there is a lot of people are very like unfair and angry at her for things that she can't control, and hate her for reasons that they have no reason hating her for. But I think she's really trying to say that she is you know, the next big, like, that she is a sex symbol to the same degree as Marilyn was. And but try, like, literally putting herself in the same dress means that she is, like, she doesn't measure up.
Like, physically and politically, it doesn't fit. I also, and this is such a, like, this is such a silly thing to be caught up on, but if you're going to talk about exaggerated body types and the Gilded Age love for, like, extreme silhouettes, she's fucking built for that, right? She has exactly the kind of dramatic hourglass body shape that looks fantastic in Gilded Age clothing.
Yeah. She has a natural bustle.
Yeah, she could have looked so good. And instead, she's wearing this dress that doesn't actually do up. There are pictures of her where you can see it's kind of tied awkwardly at the back. You can see her underwear. And she had to have that weird fur stole thing to kind of cover the fact that the dress didn't fit her. And it just feels... it feels like a very particular and very weird form of self-harm in a lot of ways. To be like, I had to punish myself to fit into this dress that doesn't even fit me because I'm obsessed with this person who is dead and who I cannot, like, actually access.
If she had just worn the replica and made Marilyn's hair into some sort of weird jewellery, she would have been on my redemption picks list. But because of the damage that is being done to a historic object... just far too upset about it. And I'm also really upset about how the self-abuse, like the kind of the dieting that she had to do to even begin to fit into this, is not healthy. And I wish to never hear about that kind of stuff ever.
Yeah, I agree. And there is sort of that question of what is the point of spectacle that Helen brought up earlier? Is the Met Gala about history? Is it about spectacle? And there's something... very Baroque in a sense about it. It just, it's like the masks of Inigo Jones. what were those but this sort of lavish entertainment? But behind all of that are all these political messages that are being relayed. So whether or not the Met Gala organizers are thinking about any kind of historical benefit or purpose, I think there is in every one of these outfits, the way we've been discussing their history and what they mean. And especially last year with the America one, where there were some overt political messages on display, there tends to always be, like, there's a reason we're talking about it, and it's not just the spangles. And I think that that is fascinating as a cultural institution, in a way, that celebrity culture is intersecting here with political culture, with historical understandings, with museums, and all of it is all in this one weird night. But so this was an explicitly historical, well, we think, unless it was Gilded Glamour, but we think that it was an explicitly historical Met Gala theme, the Gilded Age. What would your top picks for a Met Gala theme in a historical way be?
I think the time that most people really smashed it was when the theme was, like, the Catholic imagination.
Yeah.
So I would love, like, some either, like, Counter-Reformation or give all the men who just turn up in a suit, like, just do it Calvinism. And see, the people who know, like, there'll be some great, really great interpretations, I think. Or, and this is my final one, if you want to stay on the American theme, do, like, Christian evangelicism. And, yeah, like, let's just see all the denim.
Ooh, I don't know if America's ready for that conversation. See, it's tough because, like, this is part of why I'm so fired up about this subject, is, like, this specific era in history is one of my favourite eras, and I just don't think that the celebrities did it justice. Yeah, I don't... something, like, off the beat, like, history of Icelandic fashion... that would be really cool and interesting. Like, in Icelandic fashion, they have this traditional heritage of knitting. They have all these complicated patterns and interlaced shapes. And there's a lot of sort of handmade stuff. And it's very working against the landscape to create something that's beautiful and functional. So I think that would be kind of cool.
I think I saw somewhere that next year's theme is going to be, like, space and space age. Which could be fun. I may have completely made this up. I don't know. I actually now cannot stop thinking about what Helen was saying about, like, hair jewelry and stuff. I want something about, like, morning clothing and, like...
yes!
Goth fashion and, yeah, like, morning dress and things like that. Also, I've just realized I will literally be in New York in May next year, so maybe I'll go and be one of those weirdos who, like, waits outside the hotel.
Please do. We'll have...
Maybe you'll be on the red carpet by next year.
That will never happen.
I like the space age. I would like it if it were specifically interpreted as 1950s atomic era B-movie space age. I think that would be
great.
For me, maybe a really interesting way to think about fashion. All right. Well, I think we've not exhausted the Met Gala because we could probably go on for another hour, but I think we've done it justice.
I think so too.
We're in the same boat tonight, Mama.
Slay.
Is it a slay?
Big slay.
Big slay.
Big slay.
I think we just found a new sign off. Thanks for listening, everyone. And until next time, big slay.